And welcome back to the fourth episode of Hanging with Heavy. And what we like to do here on Hanging with Heavy is we like to sit down and have one-on-one interviews with fellow members of the AllWrestling.com community. AllWrestling.com Week in Review community, to be precise. And a lot of people have come and gone throughout the years. And this is a chance to get to know some of them one way or another. Maybe you have never even heard of this person. Maybe there's someone who's fairly new. That's all the premise of this show is sit down, get a little more than the 90 seconds you get a week on that show, and get to know some of these guys. Now, with the three episodes in the bank, of the three, I finally got them. Finally got Dan, so we got the show off the ground. Finn ended up being episode three, and then I threw in Mr. Old School, the Mountie, at the second episode as a nice little gesture of my 5-year anniversary of becoming a part of the AllWrestling.com Week in Review, which, by the way, you can find on all your podcast needs, all your places such as iTunes and Stitcher. But this one, in all honesty, this my next guest. You know it by reading the episode name, but I want to explain something. This was not my pick for the next guest originally. I have two people in mind, and I wanted to get them out eventually. It's not something I was really hardcore pressed on. And then this particular person kind of put up a challenge, because this person is from the West Coast, and he is a fan of the Golden State Warriors. And he said, you know, how about we do a Hanging with Heavy before Game 1 of the NBA Finals of the Warriors versus the Cavs? So I was like, all right, we'll see what happens. Last Friday night, the Cavs clinched it up, got back to the NBA Finals, and there was the big question about the Golden State Warriors, because they were down 3-1. Well, as if you follow any sports, you follow the NBA, you know that the Golden State Warriors managed to come back and win the series 4-3. So I'm sitting here one day, one night before our team's face in the finals, I'm here with the one and only, the ultimate one, MJR.
And I am so glad to be on this show. I really am. You don't know how nerve-wracking it is to sit there and watch this great team, the 73-win team, just bungle it. Just not come together throughout this entire series.
Hold on. I don't know what that's like. I mean, take the 73 wins part out, and yes, I know what it's like every year.
But I'm glad to be doing this show. I would have begged to do this show even if we wasn't in the final, even if our teams didn't meet in the finals.
Eventually you would have been on, but you threw it out like a week ago, and I was just kind of like, okay, we'll see what happens. And then I think it was moments after they won, you sent me a message, and you were just like, what was it? You said, about doing a Wednesday night or something?
Yeah. I said C before game one.
Okay.
Because I didn't know exactly when game one was going to be, but when I see that game one was going to be on Thursday, I was like, oh, this would be awesome to get to record this on a Wednesday, not to date the show or anything.
As soon as we're done, I'm going to put this in post edit. I mean, the only small things I should have to do, and then the only big problem is getting it on Podbean. Like, for some reason, it takes forever for me to post on Podbean. But
wow,
yeah, I don't know why. But what'll probably happen is I'll go to post it, I'll let it load, and I'll put something over my laptop, and I'll go to bed. And then when I wake up, I'll just hit publish, and I've done that before.
Nice. So you're not sitting there staring at it like, okay, come on, upload.
Yeah, it just takes forever. I probably got to fix some shit on my computer, but it's like one step at a time thing. Luckily, well, actually, also, while it's uploading, I still have WIRX shit to do, but that's neither here nor there.
But yes, game one is tomorrow night, and I can't wait for Steph Curry to go fucking Super Saiyan on LeBron James.
I hate that guy. I hate Stephen Curry.
How do you hate Steph Curry? That is like hating Ned Flanders. That is like Homer hating Ned Flanders.
People hate the Browns, and how do you hate the Browns? They're like the most... I've heard a comedian actually state that hating on the Browns is like hating on the Special Olympics.
Okay, first of all, you need to. First of all, that's a dig at the Browns itself, not the people who hate the Browns. Because I don't hate the Browns. I think more people feel sorry for the Browns. They're like, come on, we want you to win, but then something happens. Manziel happens, and then you're like, we thought we had you back, but then you went and messed it all up.
I really wanted the freaking Thunder to win so bad. All they needed was one win in three games, and they could not do it.
I'll tell you what it is. Do you not want the one thing that racked my nerves the entire time?
What's that?
I have a buddy at work. For those who don't know, I work graveyard shifts for security, right? And so me and my buddy gets into these, you know, big, you know, sports discussions, and he kept saying, and I kept seeing this on Facebook, oh, the NBA is rigged. I'm like, first of all, the NBA is not rigged. I don't believe in that. But then he kept saying, the Warriors are going to win, and they're going to win the finals and become the greatest team of NBA history. At that point, I kind of wanted the Warriors to not go on, so that way I can go, ha, told you the NBA is not rigged. And then it put me in this awkward thing, like, I got this jersey, I really root for this team, but you know what, I can't watch the, and I wouldn't have been able to watch the finals if the Thunder had moved on.
You won last year. Sharing is caring, so it is our turn. So it would have been perfectly fine.
LeBron has two rings. It's okay.
We, the Cleveland fan base, we haven't, just that, Cleveland alone. Now, I'm going to throw out the Cavs. We haven't won anything since 1964, and that was the Cleveland Browns.
Well, the Warriors haven't won anything since... The Warriors didn't win their first...
You won last year. You won.
We won last year. We won last year, but before then, we hadn't won an NBA title since 1975. And do not get me started on the Oakland A's or the San Francisco 49ers, the Oakland Raiders. Hell, the San Jose Sharks, and they ain't even been around that long.
Well, they're in the NHL playoffs.
Yeah, but they...
I mean, not the playoffs, but the... Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're in the Stanley Cups.
Yeah, then the... I know they're playing right now. I seen Brian was at the game, but...
Oh, wow. I put it to you like this. I don't watch enough... I would root for the Sharks, but I don't watch enough hockey to troll Brian on Facebook or Twitter about it.
That's all you need is to troll somebody else. At least your Niners suck.
Well, that's true. The Niners do suck.
Well, this past year, I should say, they were horrible.
Oh, they were no. I will admit the one thing I like about my kind of fandom is that I can admit when our teams suck, and I kind of feel for you when you go on rants about, you know, the Browns not doing good, because like, well, you're a real fan, heavy. You care about a team enough to really, you know, just say this team sucks and they need to get better. Tough love.
Oh, yeah.
Still gonna root for them.
Yeah, I always throw out jokes about him. I always have fun with that stuff. But us in Cleveland, we want the championship, and this is really interesting, because we definitely want the revenge.
I don't think you guys are gonna get this revenge.
But then again, you gotta remember, hopefully we can stand by the fact of our two star players, or two of our other star players besides LeBron, obviously, mm-hmm. they're healthy this time.
That's true, but then if you pay attention to season stats like I do, we kind of beat you guys at full strength.
Do you remember what happened after the second game, though?
No, actually, I don't remember what happened after the second game.
We fired David Blatt.
I thought that was a dumb move. I really thought that was a dumb move.
I mean, no, actually, their records were, I think, similar. So you can't. It's hard to say if it was a good move or a bad move.
Yeah,
but I think it's if the team isn't around him, rallying around him, that's a bad sign. It's like the Bears with Mark Trestman. He was starting to do a little bit more harm than good, and it wasn't exactly his fault. And the Bears said, "You know what? You got to go."
You know what? Here's the thing: if it's a move like that, I kind of understand it, but at the same time, I'm kind of like, well, if he goes anywhere else, or he gets offered from any other team and they blow up, you're just going to look stupid. And you have what, Tyronn Lue? I don't credit him with this season. I'm sorry, I can't. Because you walked into a situation where there's already good teams. You didn't build this team from the ground up. You didn't coach this team to a championship game. You just stepped in. It's just good timing. That's all.
I think,
and you,
There's that aspect of it, but I think there's also a little bit different bit of coaching, as far as what I've heard from the sidelines. It almost sounded like David Blatt like let LeBron run the ship, but I think, I mean, granted, it's probably a little bit the same with Tyronn Lue, but I feel that there's kind of him going at times, because there was a report, I think I heard him, he told LeBron to shut the fuck up.
Yeah, no, I heard that same report. I was like, well, so I was kind of shocked. I was like, whoa, you mean a guy who Allen Iverson stepped over is telling their star player he needs to be quiet and listen? There might be something here to Tyronn Lue. But I'll put it to you like this. Had they kept David Blatt, I think I would give them more credit, because they already came. I would give them more of a chance to win a championship this year. I really would. But with Tyronn Lue, I'm like, I don't think he has it yet. Give him another year, keep the same team around him, then and hope that the Warriors don't make it to the championship round. I can see rooting for Cleveland.
Yeah, but you fuckers are here.
Yes, but this year, no, it's not. This year, no bueno. We're going to this is time for the this is the reason why I want the Warriors to win this one, because I want everybody to shut the fuck up about them not being able to stand up against the 92 Bulls.
I mean, that's always been the thing about the 92 Bulls. They're a very much a glorified team. I figured it would be more or less you would want to stifle the critics that say that Stephen Curry is not the most valuable player.
He won two MVP. The man has beaten his own 3-point record, and he won this season a unanimous vote MVP. How can you not call him the best player?
No. I agree with a lot of stuff that Colin Cowherd says of the whole like best and most valuable, like two different things. I think Stephen Curry is the best player on the best team, but LeBron is probably and most likely the most valuable, as in you take those components out. Because I always said that was the same thing with the NFL. They always like, it's not necessarily who's the best and who has the stats. It's who has like proven to be the most valuable.
I hate the bag on your boy here, but I don't think LeBron James is the most valuable. And that's only because it's nothing to do with his game, and it's nothing really to do with his game or his skill set. It more has to do with the fact that I don't think LeBron James has a killer instinct. And to me, that's the main difference that separates him from Jordan, and it was really separates him from Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant, you can tell in championship games, in very clutch games, he took control. He said, fuck this team, fuck however much we're down, we're going to win this game. I don't care if it's 2 point, I don't care if it's .20 on the board, I don't care if it's 2 minutes left in the game, we're going to win this game. With LeBron James, I kind of feel like he just kind of gives up after a while.
See, I don't know, because look at everything that went on in the playoffs last year.
Mm-hmm.
After Kevin Love got injured and Kyrie Irving went through all his stuff, we managed to be 2 wins away from actually winning it. Unlike the first time we were there as a team and we got swept by the Spurs.
Yes, that's true.
So we hobbled in and at least managed to get 2 wins. And granted, it's trying to find some sort of positive in it all, but we were a beat-up team and we managed to get that far. Imagine what we would be with 2 other players.
But the thing about it is, I don't think LeBron James has that quality to galvanize his team. Like Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan, you knew had that quality. LeBron James just kind of go, well, you know, we're down 10 points. It's 2 minutes left. Just kind of pack it in, guys. Come on, let's hope for next year. Because if you saw like the last five, not I'm gonna say like the last minute of that game, you just saw J.R. Smith just start putting up 3-pointers and hitting them. I kind of wanted that to be LeBron James, not J.R. Smith.
I think it's because LeBron has done that many times already. What sucks is he did that the first time he was here,
mm-hmm,
and put up those numbers, but there was no cast around him. If Love and Irving, obviously they couldn't have been here for certain reasons, like during that time frame, or we had players like that, we probably would have at least been more competitive against Spurs, could have even beat them. But LeBron is pretty much like everybody they've put behind him. That first run was like we were trying to make it work, but it really just didn't.
And you know what? That right there, I understand why he went to Cleveland. When he went to Miami. And I'm like, well, Dan Gilbert, you really didn't put anybody behind him. And anybody you put behind him that was credible, they were already out of their prime. Guys like, you know, Shaq. Shaq was one or two seasons away from retiring. And didn't he end up retiring after like two seasons?
He had the season with the Cavs, and then he had the season with the Celtics, and then he retired.
See?
But even it's funny that you bring up Shaq, because Shaq in his book really exposed LeBron about how he was the first time in Cleveland, because this was written when he was in Miami, mm-hmm. of basically saying like a lot of stuff was ran through him and he approved everything. So yeah, Dan Gilbert couldn't get all these players, but these are the people that LeBron wanted. So LeBron approves of it. And then after he creates this mess and he realizes it, he just says, all right, I'm going to go play in Miami for a while. Which there's funny conspiracy theories that think that LeBron had this plan the whole time. One of the biggest keys around it is LeBron has his management company. And when he moved to Miami, the company stayed up here.
Mm.
And there was the 4-year clause thing, which was kind of like weird at the time. There was a bunch of other stuff too.
What 4-year clause?
Well, at the end of 4 years is when he was going to be able to opt out.
Oh.
Because obviously he was there 4 years and he opted out. Kind of like he wanted to win some championships with some people so he can get that off of his backs, and then he would come back to Cleveland.
Mm. But again, I kind of side with LeBron when he goes to Cleveland, because I mean, why do I keep saying Cleveland? I mean Miami.
I did it too.
He's going to Miami and he wants to win championships. It's kind of the same way I feel about with Kevin Durant. Like everybody, like I'm arguing. I was having this discussion with somebody who was saying, "Oh, Kevin Durant's going to come to the Lakers." I'm like, why would Kevin Durant come to a team that freaking sucks? At this point right now, they are terrible. They're not worth anybody's they're really not worth anything, and the only reason why you're giving me is because it's LA. Like that's not how players think nowadays. Players aren't, you know, they're not mesmerized by like what city they're going to. They're going, what's the best place I can go to win a championship? And I think LeBron kind of put the blueprint for that. You know, find a team where I have a really good buddy on, and we get ourselves a player who is almost out of his contract that we can bring onto the team. Hell, if it means me taking less money to bring this person on, fuck it, I'll take less money. As long as we can win, as long as the end goal is winning a championship. And it, to me, his plan worked to perfection.
What's really crazy about the whole thing is, regardless of who wins, Varejao can win a NBA championship.
You know what? Just think of that. That is true. He can win an NBA championship.
Yeah, it's true. I know. I've seen it all over social media. Like, no matter what now. Like, but I don't know what, like, how that works with the Cavs. Like, if the Cavs win, like, he has to apply for it, or I don't know how that works. But obviously, because he's with the Warriors, if they were to win, he gets it automatically. But it's that weird thing, and I've never heard of that before. But I think this is the only time where it's been. Actually, no, they did say this is the only time that no matter what, like, one player has played on both teams during that same season.
I can see that being a possibility because he was let go, because he did play a certain amount of days with that, a certain amount of time with that team.
I believe it's 31. He played 31 games for us and has played 33 games for the Warriors.
Mm. That is true. Like, that is I mean, if it's true that he could win, that no matter what, he wins the championship, I'm like, why doesn't, like, any player try to do that? But I guess that's just the luck of the draw right there.
For the Warriors to pick him up in the first place, like, I was happy we got rid of him because he was kind of a bench warmer and he was hardcore injury prone.
Mm.
I can't remember how many times, like, he's been injured. Like, I know he spent most of the season last year injured.
Well, he was your start. He was the starting center.
Used to be.
That used to be. But then you guys picked up Timothy Mozgov and
Mozgov.
It's Mozgov?
Mozgov. Or as we say, Mozgod.
Mozgod. No. There's only one basketball god, and that's Prasin God.
No, praise be to Mozgov. All hail Delhi.
No. It's all praise be to the Prasin God. You know what, man? I'm mad that he kind of declined in his rookie year. I think he came in second for the Rookie of the Year. I truly thought he was going to get Rookie of the Year this year. Oh.
Yeah, I'm here. Okay. We spent a good amount here on NBA Talk. If Kat is still listening, I have no idea. He's probably pulling his hair out. I mean, we can get into football talk. And then he's really going to be shooting himself.
I have a question. What hair? I've seen Kata. Kata does not have hair.
You
mean he's pulling out his beard? Like,
No, he shaved his beard. It's all, like, short now.
So what the hell is he pulling at? His pubes?
He could be. He could be.
And that's good, and that hurts him more than it hurts any of us.
But I think it's one question that, like, because a lot of people don't know who you are. I think you've been a part-timer as long as I've been around. You'll do a couple calls here and there and then come back and forth. You had your own show for a while. I think you're still paying network dues.
I want to get into that. Let's get into the minutia of that. I pay network dues because I love the network.
I was there at the start. You were? I can't remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was me, you, Joe,
Brian,
Jack,
Fat Ninja,
Captain, PK and AH.
Yes, PK and AH.
That was all of us.
Yes.
Did you start off with your show? I can't. It's trying to, like, remember back with the scheduling stuff.
What I remember is I heard about it. I heard that you guys were doing a network, and I was like, well, I want to get in on that. So I said, hey, let me get in on that. And they were like, pitch it to us. And then I pitched the show, and then I think Joe at the time. Yeah, was it Joe? It was Brian. Yeah, it was Joe. It was Joe. No, it wasn't Joe. It was Brian. It was the other. I can't remember. I don't like people calling people the other guy. I hate when I can't remember people's names.
Jack.
Yes. Jack. I pitched the show to Jack and Brian. Jack liked the idea, and Jack was like, "All right, screw it, let's bring him on." And from then there, and I was doing shows from then on.
When's the last time you did a show?
Yeah. I don't remember. I really don't. I don't remember. Like, it's one of the, you know what, funny thing is, I want to do a show, I really do, but the thing about it is, I don't want to be stuck doing, like, politics.
Yeah, because that was kind of your thing, and I figure with the election season coming up like this, like, if that's what you wanted to do, like, this is, like, the prime season.
I know it is prime. I mean, we have Donald Trump and all that craziness going on. We have, you know, all the chaos that's going on the, funny thing is, not to get too deep into politics, I was expecting more chaos on the Republican side and not so much chaos on the Democratic side. That's the funny, topsy turvy thing about this year's election. It's like nobody on the Democratic side can agree on who should be the front runner. Like nobody, people don't trust. People love Bernie Sanders, but he doesn't have enough support from more established people to really break that seal, and nobody really trusts Hillary, and nobody who's a Democrat can even trust Trump, but yet all the people that are Republicans, they're just falling in line. They're like, well, you know what, it's, you know what, he's the, I don't like the guy, but you know what, he's the nominee, fuck it. So I was, and it's a lot of stuff that I expected Trump to do. I expected Trump to be out really early, but that didn't happen.
Yeah, but he still managed to win it.
Yeah, I know.
It was probably the more craziest part about it.
I know. And like I said, I don't want to delve too deep into politics. Cause I do want to talk about wrestling and why I still pay network dues on, and even though I don't have a show. but like I said, this year's election is really crazy. Like no matter who wins, it's really going to be a drastic change for the country. Like
you,
go ahead.
I would say you could have done a NBA podcast.
That is true. Good. But a lot of people on the network are not big NBA fans.
It's true. I'm not even that big of an NBA fan.
I mean,
I'm more football. I have a countdown on my phone of not only when the season starts, but when the Hall of Fame game is, which as of right now, we are 67 days away from the Pro Football Hall of Fame, 99 days away from the season kickoff, and 249 days away from Super Bowl 51.
Yes, but let's not keep talking about American sports because I'm pretty sure Kata, who's in New Zealand, I think. New Zealand. He's almost running out of pubes to tear out.
Yeah, between that politics, I mean, we can start talking about Ghostbusters. I know he's a really big fan of Ghostbusters.
That's another thing. Why are people so mad about this Ghostbusters reboot or remake or what is this? What are we calling this?
It's, I think it's officially a reboot. Okay. Because everything that happened in the first two movies never happened. Which, personally, I don't like that. I don't like the whole hitting the reset button, but it's something I can look past. Like, fine, whatever. We're in a whole different universe. Okay, whatever. My biggest thing is the casting. I don't like Cecily Jones. I think she is nothing but a female version of Tracy Morgan. Like, she does the same kind of comedy.
I try to watch SNL. I'm more of a Mad TV guy myself, so SNL was kind of, you know, a little softball to me. And when I see her on SNL, I think she's funny, but it's like I can see how this could wear on you if you consistently watch SNL.
Next time you see something of her and she is doing her normal kind of acting, think Tracy Morgan.
Oh, wow.
And you will probably just go, oh, my God, that's exactly what she's doing. And Melissa McCarthy, to me, it's just someone I've kind of had enough of. It's kind of with her, it's been the same shtick, and it seems like that's the same thing in this movie. That is the only thing I complain about.
Is Jones and McCarthy?
Yes. That's the casting I don't like. I always figure, like, it's not the women thing, because I like Kristen Wiig. I think she is funny, and Kate McKinnon is the other one, and she's fucking hilarious. She does a great Justin Bieber impression, Ellen DeGeneres, and there's another like really good one. Hillary Clinton.
Do you know who I would, if you're going to replace McCarthy and Jones, who would you replace them with though?
I'm wondering if they're trying to go for that kind of demographic. Like, okay, we need somebody who's African American, so we got to put them in there, and we want someone who's kind of like going to be the big person. I don't know who exactly would fit those. I just think of like, okay, who's funny? I don't care color, I don't care race, but I know other people do. Like, let's just...
If we're doing race, I think we can replace Jones with Aisha Taylor. I think Aisha Taylor is fucking hilarious. Now, I know she mostly does voice acting for Archer, but I think she could... I think trying her out on... I think giving her the spot would do good. Would do wonders.
Yeah, there's like... couple other comedians that I would be surprised they didn't throw in there, but it seemed like of the four women, three of the four have been on SNL, two are current, the other one's alumni, and then Melissa McCarthy, she just kind of fits in there with the bridesmaid connections. So it's, I mean, I'm there's a part of me though that is becoming a lot like Ceramic Samurai in this whole thing, because I know she's a hardcore Ghostbusters fan like myself, but she is, you know, she's 100% for it. I'm seeing a lot of negativity on the internet where even I'm like starting to take a couple steps back and just saying like, all right guys, let's tone it down. Like angry video game nerd, like, I'm not gonna do a review on this looks so bad, blah blah. I'm like,
I saw that video and I at one hand I kind of was like, dude, I expect better from you because you are a big movie buff. And I understand that you think the script, if you don't find something funny, you don't find it funny. I'm not going to call you misogynist because you don't find it funny. But at the same time, I'm one of those people who's like, give it a chance. Like when I first heard it and I think you posted about it on Facebook, I said, I'm going to wait to see a trailer first. If the trailer don't look cool, then I'm going to be like, I don't know about spending my money on it. I'm just not going to down something because it's a drastic change.
Yeah, that stuff never bothers me. To me, I'm a huge Ghostbusters fan. I mean, right now, part of my Ghostbusters collection is being hidden by part of my Doctor Who collection. But, I mean, I got a bunch of stuff. I just went out this past weekend and bought a couple different things. And even though things that I'm buying are going to be more for the classic series now, as it's called, it's just more or less I have to give some sort of respect to this new series, this reboot, and say, you know what, because of you, I'm getting this, so I'm at least going to try. You know, I went out last weekend and bought six cans of overpriced Ecto Cooler because it's the only way I could get it until it fully hits the stores everywhere. But you know, like, even like popping a can of that and drinking it, I was kind of like it brought me back to my childhood, and a part of me said, like, I could get through the Ghostbusters movie, the new one, because of something like this.
You know what? That is nostalgia that I actually like. And then there's nostalgia that I don't like, where people kind of like to compare, you know, and hold on, and Kata, before you start tearing out the rest of those pubes, I'm going to go back to NBA for a minute. So you can fast forward 15, 30 seconds. It's kind of like going back to the argument with, you know, 92 Bulls versus the Golden State Warriors, and how people kept comparing them. People kept saying, oh, Jordan would do it. The 92 Bulls would crush them. I was like, well, you're really talking out of nostalgia. And and because you love that series and you love that team so much, you think that team is just unstoppable. And you don't see that this team would actually probably wear them out, because that would be a younger team they're dealing with, not an older team.
Well, it's the same thing of, like, even in football, like, the game changes so much. It's not just like they're changing rules to make people safer, but with the Warriors, they made the 3-point shot a bigger deal, and the rest of the NBA is doing their best to catch up to that. And, like, just things change in the games, and, like, things will change to benefit the older team, and things will change that would benefit the newer team, but it's evolution of any game.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to say, like, who would win. Because I kind of look at it like, well, the Warriors, you know, with everything they do with three-pointers, it's just like, that really wasn't done before now.
Yeah, and to tie it back to Ghostbusters, you have to tell a new story. And the only reason why you didn't get a Ghostbusters 3 is because, well, Bill Murray didn't feel like doing a Ghostbusters 3. And,
exactly.
And Harold Ramis and the rest of them didn't. And I'm glad they felt that way. They felt like we shouldn't have to replace him because he's an integral part to this, and it just wouldn't be the same movie without him. So I gotta give him credit on that, you know. But hopefully this new movie, you know, defies everybody's odds, and people kind of go, well, you know what? I went and saw it on a cheapy Tuesday, you know. I caught a matinee, and you know what? I actually liked it, and I was wrong about that.
I'm planning on seeing it the night it comes out. I mean, like, the Friday, because I don't think I'll hit a midnight showing of it because of my current work schedule. But I'm planning on going. I'll bring some things of Ecto Cooler.
Yeah. Heavy, here's how you get out of work. Here's how you get out of your work schedule. I got the bubonic plague. I'll call you tomorrow if everything's cool.
I get paid by the day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so, like, because I have a local gig now, and all I have to do is go down, pick up the load, deliver it, and come back to our terminal. And I just get paid for the day. There's times, and I've actually had days where they've said, hey, stay home, but you get paid.
Nice.
Because I've been available for work, and to take one day payoff, like, I've worked many 40 weeks, and it's feasible. But with AIW, I try to only do it once a month.
Man, you might get lucky and they say, hey, man, stay at home today. We'll still pay you.
I got lucky on St. Patrick's Day.
Really?
I wanted to drink or something, because I hadn't really had time in a long time to do something like that. Zul, are you really snoring that bad? Anyway.
If my wife was listening, she'd be like, that dog sounds just like my husband when he sleeps.
But, yeah, I kind of wanted to take the day off, and then they told me in the middle of my day, they're like, okay, you know, we don't have enough loads for you tomorrow. Just stay home. And I was just like, oh, I'm drinking a little bit tonight. I'm going to go out and have a fun St. Patrick's Day, do the kegs and eggs thing, dress up all green and everything. Oh, yeah, I did the whole thing. I had fun.
Wow, that is lucky. Hopefully luck strikes again and you're able to go to your you're able to catch the midnight showing. But speaking of movies, well, how did you feel about Batman vs. Superman?
Well, that is on Old School at the Movies. Don't be shy.
Okay.
I thought it was okay, but I felt like DC was trying to rush and catch up to Marvel, and that really hurt it for me.
That's the same thing I thought. I felt like, you know, I got my money's worth. I think it was me, my wife, and my nephew. We all went down there, and I paid like $12 a ticket. I'm more mad that I paid $12 a ticket, but I felt like I got my money's worth. But I did feel like a lot of stuff was a little rushed because they're trying to, like you said, they're trying to catch up to Marvel.
Yeah, they're trying to do the whole big Justice League thing and make, hey, look, we can do this too. We can do this too. Yeah, you can, but
should you
let it do? Well, not even that. Like, they're trying to do it too fast.
Yeah.
Like, okay, do what Marvel did. The first year, They had two movies. They had Iron Man and they had Hulk. And they just teased at stuff. And then throughout time, when they did Iron Man 2, I think that was like 2 years later, because they didn't know the success that those two movies would have. Everybody loved it. So, okay, now we're going to do this. Now, okay, in Iron Man 2, we're going to tease at some stuff. And then we'll have Thor. Okay, now we're going to tease at some stuff. Then we're going to do Captain America. And we're going to tease at something. Guess what? Avengers is next.
Yeah. I think that's the direction they're going with this next one. I think they're going to hold back Justice League for another couple years, for another maybe 2-3 years. And I say put out, you know, Flash, even though I don't like the, you know, I don't like the actor they have casted for Flash. I really don't. Because I kind of feel like they should have done this with, they should have casted the guy who already plays Flash on the TV show and just, and utilized that TV show as a way to kind of tease things and to market the movie.
I think that's the weird thing about DC. I think they work in different, I don't want to say universes, but it's just people who own the properties and whatnot. They either they can't work together, they don't work together, but Marvel, everything with them runs through Disney, minus the ones that were sold off, and those are in their own realm. So everything that they that Marvel and Disney still own, they've created like this world around it. They might not connect them directly. Like, I don't think Jessica Jones is tied directly into everything, but I think there's ways that it is, or it's connected, into. I think the Daredevil TV show. I don't know 100% everything that they do, but I know Agent Carter and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., like how they incorporated those. Those are awesome. That adds to this massive universe. Two shows I really want to watch.
Yeah, and I seriously think, because, you know, DC, everything is under Warner Brothers, they could easily do that, but they just choose not to. Like, it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like that person that keeps walking past a $100 bill that's not going anywhere. The wind's not blowing it anywhere, but they just keep walking past it. They just look at it and be like, oh, $100. I don't need it. I'm going to keep walking.
I think one of the things is, back in the 80s and around that time, Marvel was doing horrible and DC was like the king. And then eventually Marvel did a nice reset.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, like, X-Men did really good, Spider-Man did really good, and then you had whoever's idea was to create this universe and build up to something like the Avengers. Like, that just kind of revolutionized what comic book movies are about. And I think a lot of people at that time, too, were trying to catch up with Nolan. Yeah. And everything like those, like that movie trilogy is amazing.
Yeah.
I don't care what people say about Batman Begins or Dark Knight Rises, but
I love that
whole trilogy. Yeah, me too. But it's just, all three of those movies were so good, and those were done a different way. And you basically had, right at that time is when, I think Dark Knight Rises came out roughly, no, it came out the same time as the Avengers. I think it's Dark Knight came out roughly the same time as Iron Man and Incredible Hulk. Mm-hmm. And they had to look at what Marvel was doing and say, I mean, what DC was doing, or just Nolan, and say, they went somewhere different with it. We need to go somewhere different too. And they did.
For some reason, I don't know why I thought this, but when they announced Man of Steel and Dark Knight Rises was done and over with, and we all know the ending of Dark Knight Rises, spoiler alert, he blows up. I would have loved to have seen a cut scene or like an after credit scene where Superman rescues Batman, and then it goes into Man of Steel. I would have loved to have seen that. I thought that would have been fucking cool.
That would have been good, but it's Nolan and Christian Bale. Nolan didn't want to come back and do anything he was doing, and Christian Bale said he wouldn't do anything without Nolan.
So we have the battle of I'm sick and tired of doing stuff like this, so screw it. I mean, Nolan could have stayed on as like executive producer and got somebody else to do the rest of Batman.
He was something on Man of Steel. He was like executive producer or something like that, or he helped write the script, but he wasn't actually like the director. And I think that's what what Bale wanted.
Hopefully. But then you got like, I understand people's obsession or disgust with Zack Snyder, because he kind of, how do I put this nicely? He kind of makes things way too dark, almost depressing.
Yeah.
So, and I understand why people wanted Nolan to come back, and I kind of understand why people want Affleck to take over from here, because I think they both would be able to put that right amount of darkness on there, but yet make it funny still. But hopefully, hopefully I want DC to, much like TNA, I want DC to get its shit together so that way we can have some goddamn competition.
Well, with TNA, I think it's everybody else is stepping up as competition right now.
Let's go on to wrestling. Let's go on to wrestling because at this point, Kata doesn't have any more pubes on his hair and he's just sitting there mad.
Hold on. Is this the real motherfucking news?
No, it's not.
Then why are you dictating the show?
I'm sorry. Because I'm a control freak a little bit. Just a little bit, not a whole lot. I know this is Hanging with Heavy and not the real motherfucking news.
Or the real mother loving news or the real news. Or, well, the real news.
Yeah, so real news.
Let's we can start at the beginning. We can eventually talk about, like, current stuff going on. There's a bunch of that because you don't really express your opinions as much as you used to. But, you know, how did you become a wrestling fan? As we all started, you were like, fuck, damn it, I did it again. What? We started this because we did the whole thing where we started talking before the official recording and then we want to get directly into everything. I have to ask, how's it hanging?
I can't complain too much.
Hopefully it loses in six.
I can't complain too much. Not really.
All right. Now, how did you become a wrestling fan?
I became a wrestling fan in part thanks to Hacksaw Jim Duggan and Saturday Morning Wrestling. You know, I remember being a kid and at the cartoons go off watching. No. Actually, you know what? Let's go back further than that. I remember Saturday morning wrestling and watching the debut match of The Undertaker. That's what hooked me as a wrestling fan. Seeing this guy who came out larger than life and just skulked to the ring and really stare down some jobber whose name is not important at this moment and just beat him with these slow, very methodical moves and then walking the tightrope and then getting on the top rope, walking it. And mind you, this is Undertaker in his prime, come down with the old school for the pin and the win. That's what got me hooked into wrestling. And then from there, it's the Hacksaw Jim Duggins and the Attitude Era. And then I think I took a break and then I came back. Do you know how I came back to wrestling after that?
How?
I came back in the thick of the Monday Night Wars. Like just when the Monday Night Wars was just beginning to start, and watching both and having this desire to root on WCW because I always thought they were the underdogs, and seeing WWF at the time just, you know, be just watch these two titans go at it. So that's what really got me stuck into wrestling. I've been watching it, and from then on I've been watching it ever since. I can't stop. I can't go a week without no kind of wrestling news, without listening to any wrestling podcasts. I just can't go a week without it.
Who's your favorite wrestler of all time?
That is a man. Are we talking from any era, right?
Yeah, any era of all time.
All time. I'm going to have to go with Undertaker. Just the longevity this guy has and the resiliency. We'll see and the fact that at any point in time he can come out and look like he is and still look like he can still go in a ring. It used to be Kevin Nash because I thought Nash was the biggest guy in the yard and can talk the most shit.
I was a Kevin Nash fan. I mean, then again, it was like right around that time in between Brett and Shawn, mm-hmm. where he had his like year in the sun. And I don't know. I mean, that's when I thought he was like really cool. And I mean, I think that followed him to WCW for me.
I thought NWO Nash was awesome. Like he's the one who made Hogan was the surprise Hulk. Cause this was the first time you seen red and you saw red and yellow turn, you know, black and white. And he was a heel for the first time in his entire career. But to me, the linchpin of that whole thing. And to me, it wouldn't have worked without Kevin Nash. Because let's face it, some of those guys in the NWO they wasn't the best on the mic. And you needed a guy like Kevin Nash to put them over. You know, you need a guy like Kevin Nash to make someone like a Conan, you know, seem like the baddest motherfucker in the NWO. I mean, Scott Hall could do it too, but Scott Hall was only there for like those really witty, funny one-liners. He was the to me Scott Hall comes off as the lackey, the right-hand man. He's the right-hand man to Kevin Nash. But to me, the linchpin of the NWO is Kevin Nash.
You would almost think though he would be the Enzo and Cass of that dynamic.
That is,
I mean, he'd be the Enzo.
He would be. And I, you know what? Funny thing is, I think when you look at Enzo and Cass now, a lot of people think, you know, New Age Outlaws, but I think Outsiders.
I've also thought just Diesel and Sean, but in this conversation it does make me think, you know, Scott Hall and Kevin Nash.
Because Enzo, you can tell, is the skilled one. Like, he is a little more, he's more of an in-ring guy. Like, he doesn't have to do a whole lot of talking. And Enzo is more of the Scott Hall. Like, Big Cass is more of the Scott Hall. Very skilled in-ring. Can go in there, whip ass with the rest of them. And Enzo is more of the Kevin Nash. A little smaller, but, you know, he ties the group together. He's the one that ties them both together. Because without him, I don't think Cass would last as long if he didn't team with Enzo.
Probably.
Yeah.
Really comes out.
Yeah. I also think I'm kind of glad to see that they're the only tag team that's come up and they've never won the NXT titles. I mean, the NXT tag team titles.
I think it was one of those things in NXT, they really didn't need it, but you put them on Raw and SmackDown, you know, I mean, that's where they're going to get, that's the main thing of getting those tag titles.
Yeah. I have a question. Do you think they would be able to win the tag titles?
I do, but I don't know when. Because I'd figure they want something special, but I don't know whether, do you want them to beat the New Day? Do you want them to beat Anderson and Gallows? Who do they beat and when do they do it? Do they do a SummerSlam? Do you do that a random pay-per-view? Do they do it at Royal Rumble or even WrestleMania? It's so hard to pick. I think everybody wants to win a title at WrestleMania, but that's not feasible.
Yeah, it's not.
You have to win it some other time. Or I should say everybody wants their first title win to be there. So it's hard to figure out like when they want to strike that iron with them.
I personally think that they could reasonably win a title anywhere. Like, that's a team that could reasonably, I could see, they've already been built, they're already here, they already have the mic skills, they already have the in-ring ability to win a title. It's just, let's do something that makes sense.
And they're over. They are so over. Everybody loves them.
My wife does that. When they come on screen and Enzo does the, hey, you can't teach that, she does that too. So if they're over with people who do not watch wrestling whatsoever, they're over. That's how I judge how over you are. I judge how over you are by non-wrestling fans.
Yeah, like I had this girl that I went to high school with, and she posted a status on Monday night. And she tagged her boyfriend in it, so I don't know if he's a fan or they were just watching it together, whatever. And she said, like, I'm Smack Talker, Skywalker, and I got a Mike Sabre for a hater. And I responded, like, how you doing? And she wrote back, you know, what we got here? Couple haters? And I wrote back, couple haters? Couple haters?
Couple haters? I thought I was not going to like that at first, but then I found myself saying it, like, oh, look what we got here. Couple haters. Like, damn, that damn Enzo. He has a way of making something that sounds so fucking corny, but yet it sounds so cool. Like, you would think that how you're doing wouldn't get over, but then you find yourself saying it.
I had fun when I was single because I was on Plenty of Fish, and I had that as, like, my headline thing. How you doing? And to see how many people would like make a comment about it. And most people thought it was a Friends reference for Joey going, because he always went, "How you doing? No, how you doing?" But it's no. How you doing?
and then the whole, you know, you can't teach that. That's another thing to me that's gotten over with that. Something that I thought was like super corny ends up getting over.
I think the one big thing is for them is how long till Carmella comes up, because they have to reunite them. But it's not like, hey, let's do it tomorrow. Yeah. Like, they can wait a little while, and I don't know who they would have a beef with, but I would figure some woman would get involved. But I can't wait till they do that, too, and they create that little group.
I can't wait for that. I can't wait for Carmella to come up. I think she's not a distraction, because I think when you do that kind of pairing, the diva in the group, or I should say the woman in the group kind of becomes a distraction, and kind of leads to those breakup storylines. With Carmella, it doesn't seem that way. It seemed like she fits perfect in there.
Everybody was calling NXT like, oh, you know, oh, they're going to break up, they're going to break up, they're going to break up. Look, they got Carmella. But I think they tried to prove, like we don't have to go that route.
And I'm glad they don't go
route. We just want to take this personality that is similar and mix them together and see where we go. Yeah.
I'm glad they went that way. I really am. Now, I think also, you know, another person, another wrestling thought that I had. Do you think AJ Styles can go to me? You watch Monday, right?
Okay, of course.
And you saw AJ last Monday. AJ Styles didn't get a Money in the Bank, right? Correct. I don't think AJ needs a Money in the Bank.
No, I think, well, if anything, not this year, because I think he signed a couple year deal. Like, he can still do a lot of great things, like, especially they're right now, instead of Money in the Bank, that he gets Cena. He could be a great Royal Rumble winner or a Money in the Bank winner next year. There's still so much that they can do with him, but I think I do kind of agree to an extent, like, he doesn't need it. They would be cool, I should add, but needing it is a different story.
It's the one thing I could say about AJ, because as long as he's been in the game, wrestling and wrestling all over the world, to me, he's to me on the same level as Cena, except Cena's done it all in one company, and while AJ has done it over the span of like two companies and some indie and a lot of indie promotions. And I think it was only natural that we have this Cena versus AJ feud. That, to me, that was natural. I saw it coming a little bit. But if you know, Anderson and Gallows didn't get involved and this was like a friendly rivalry, I still would think this was a match made in heaven.
Yeah, I think as soon as they signed him, Cena probably said, like, I want him.
Yeah.
Like, we need to finally get this match done. Because I think that's the other thing, like, wrestling fans for a long time always gave Cena such a bad reputation, but I think he naturally loves the business, and he wants to see some of the things the fans do.
Yeah.
But they don't necessarily go that way. And as soon as, like, we had these two under one roof, we know that he was a fan of Styles. Yeah. So now we're going to finally get it. It made, like, whenever Styles came out, I went, okay, this makes sense. I'm happy.
I personally think Cena is nothing like the Hogans of old. The Hogans or any of the real political movers back there. I think he can be. And if he needs to use that card, he will. But if it's something that he knows the fans really want to see, he's like, no, let's make that happen. You know?
All right. Let's get into one aspect that we haven't really talked about. We can review, because you've been so able. Like, how many calls do you think you put in a year?
I would say I'd probably put in 5 a year, if that.
Damn. People can be confused, and they're going to think I'm on the call with JSB.
No, you're not on the call with JSB. No, I am not. I am not JSB. I could be funny, but I'm not. I'm witty. I'm not, like, coming up with jokes on the fly. I have to really think about mine. So, you know, don't get me wrong. No beef. I like JSB. I think he's okay in doses. But
I don't like him.
I know. I heard the last episode.
Yeah, but enough putting him over. How did you find the weekend review and your journey of it all?
How I found the weekend review was, I was looking for a really good wrestling podcast. You know, something where I can have an opinion, or I can laugh, or just a podcast. Even if the podcast didn't like have like an email segment or callers, and that's not really what I was looking for. I was just looking for someone who could really, really talk wrestling. And mind you, at that time, there was a lot of shitty wrestling podcasts. I mean, just bottom of the barrel crap holes. I think is it okay to say another wrestling podcast on here?
Okay.
At the time, the only wrestling podcast I subscribed to and that I'm still listening to at this day and age is like Smart Wrestling Fan. That's really the only one. And just so happens, I came across Impact Wrestling. I was like, well, screw it. Let me give this a try. And all it was just a guy who pretty much ran his show. We're talking about Mark Perry, people, who kind of ran his show like a call-in show. It was just like, you know, he'll give his little opinion after every call or every email, which he historically likes botching a lot. But at the same time, it was nice to hear that. And then it was nice to hear that.
So roughly when was that?
That was about, I want to say 2009. No. 2009, roughly about 2009, 2010. I don't know. My dates might be off.
Okay.
Yeah. But like I said, but throughout the whole entire journey, I liked it. Like I tried to contribute like every week. I'm one of those people like, but then as the week's gone on, and as the show built and started getting more and more contributors and getting more and more contributors, I kind of felt like when I had something, and I'll give you, matter of fact, let me get into it right now. I'll give you the reason why I don't contribute as much. And for the record, it has nothing to do with anybody on the show. Like, the one thing I try to avoid on that show is real life beefs, not ones where we scripted and it's, you know, something we're doing for fun. I try to avoid those because I think that's not conducive to anything. It doesn't help me and it doesn't help the other person. And I just don't get into that. I don't get into the sandbox. I try never to get into the sandbox. And that was kind of one of the reasons why I didn't contribute as much. But the other reason really is just mostly on me. I'm like super, believe it or not, I'm a super perfectionist. Mm-hmm. Like when it comes to like wanting to be that person that the host is like, oh man, that guy put in the best call. That guy does the best production. That guy brings up topics that no one's talking about. I want to be that guy. Is it a little selfish? Yeah, it kind of is. But at the same time, like I said, as all the people started contributing more, ideas that I would have planned that week or I would want to talk about, somebody else is already talking about it. An aspect of wrestling as a whole I would want to talk about, somebody already talked about.
Okay, so you didn't want to blend in.
Yeah, I didn't want to blend in. Because a lot of times on the show, and I start to notice it, and not as much, but a lot of people talk about the same stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, you know, there's a lot of stuff in wrestling there's a lot of aspects of wrestling we can't talk about, which is why I think it is awesome that someone like Kata comes around and he talks about New Japan, because that got me into New Japan. You know, I think it's awesome that you come along and you talk about AIW, because hell, if I'm ever in Ohio you know, not booing the Cavs, I could.
Yeah, if you ever come to Cleveland, don't wear that fucking jersey here.
Oh, I'm going to wear the jersey, but that's not the point. I want to catch an AIW show, you know, and I want to catch a Metro Pro show if I'm in Kansas City, you know. I love the fact that people are bringing in these aspects of wrestling that everyone else is not talking about.
I think one reason why people try to shy away from certain things, and it's something that it comes with the territory, is Dan doesn't necessarily know how to respond to those. I remember PK, mm-hmm. You know, he always got frustrated because, you know, he put in just as much time for his phone call as someone else. And, you know, he goes on a 5-minute diatribe about the previous caller or someone else in the British Empire at the time, maybe like Guru. And then he gets on to PK's and he spends like a minute or 30 seconds. And he just feels like I put in the same amount of time.
You expect the same amount of diatribe. I got you. But, you know, I don't expect Dan. It's not a slight at Dan. I love you, Dan. Don't take this the wrong way. But I don't expect him to know everything about everything. I really don't.
Oh, it's hard. Even like from my aspect, the only thing that it's hard for me to watch regularly is Lucha Underground. And I know everybody's all about it and all that kind of shit. But with everything going on with me and things that I do certain nights, it's just I don't have time. And I like to have at least one night completely to myself. And that's normally Thursdays. Mm.
But then again.
So tomorrow I'm going to come home and I'm going to enjoy a fucking basketball game.
But aren't you glad that someone like a Finn Fish is around to kind of keep you a little bit informed about that. Like, I don't necessarily have to watch this show because Finn Fish is going to tell me who's the coolest, what was the coolest spot that night, on this week, what was the worst shit he's seen there. So that's that, you know, difference.
Well, that's that aspect of the show, but I'm talking about someone for me, like, because of having to step in Dan's shoes and become a host and doing what I do for Wrestlecast. Like, that's the only thing that I can't watch is that. And I always hear about certain things, but you got people out there, oh my god, you're not watching Lucha Underground, why aren't you out watching Lucha Underground, you need to watch Lucha Underground, this is the best wrestling ever. And my whole thing on that is, like, I get it, you have a new favorite toy. Calm down. Like, I don't think there's anything bad about it. I'll never say anything bad about Lucha Underground. From the little bits that I've seen, it's just commercials. I go, this is smart. I love what they're doing. I have so much respect for it. But don't sit here and pound it down my throat like this is the greatest wrestling ever, when it's pretty much like some of the only other stuff, you know. Like, this is your alternative, and you're just trying to tell me this is amazing. You need to watch this. Alternatives.
Well,
are awesome.
The problem is, and I don't remember who said this, because everybody wants to qualify with someone else how cool their new thing is. Like, yeah. It's I'm trying to think. Like, and I kind of felt like that for a while. Which, if some of you follow me really personally, really hard, you know I do music. For a while, I didn't want to show people I did music because I did not want to have to qualify that to anybody. Like, you're not gonna dissuade me from doing something I love, which is why, you know, which is why I didn't really tell anybody, which is why I don't let people know I do music, but I did now, so buh.
I think I've known that for a while. I think, like, your Instagram shows up as a suggestion on
mine
all
does.
The time.
I'm pretty sure it does, and I think I follow you on Instagram too, on both of my Instagram accounts. But yeah, it's like, and you know, and I think that's how people feel. They feel like if someone like Heavy Set's not watching Lucha Underground, and he has over how many wrestling shirts do you have?
I haven't counted them in a while, but I have to be in the neighborhood. I always just stay 160.
He has over 160 shirts. Then Lucha Underground must not be that cool. I think I'm just not gonna watch it anymore. I'm just gonna weigh myself off of it.
For the record. I don't own a single TNA shirt.
I used to own two TNA shirts, a Samoa Joe one and a Beer Money one.
I always wanted an Aces and Eights shirt. Mm. That's it. All the rest of their shirts are horrible, but I own a Ring of Honor shirt. I own a House of Hardcore shirt. I'm trying to figure out, like, some of the more minorities. It's mostly independent in WWE, but still, I mean, that's just someone to throw out there that I do not own a single TNA shirt.
Wow, that is... I remember when I bought those TNA shirts too, and those are the also this really doesn't qualify the shirt. I bought a you remember Desmond Wolf, right?
Yeah.
I bought one of his really god awful ugly polos that they were selling. Mm-hmm. It was like purple and black, and it had like it was supposed to look like a football shirt, football as in soccer, and I thought it was the most coolest looking thing. And then I think like a year later, I looked at it. I was like, oh, this is the ugliest shit I've ever seen in my life. Why did I buy this?
Yeah. I'm trying to think. Is there any shirt that I regret buying? I thought I had one. I'm just like, eh. But I think I've worn most of them at least once. I always have certain ones that I gravitate towards, and I wear them too much. I hate wearing them out.
Everybody got it. I think everybody has a shirt that they love wearing and they love wearing out. Like, if I had a Kevin Owens shirt, I'd probably wear that to work every day. Granted, it'll probably start to like fade and look all sorts of ugly, but it would be one of my favorite shirts.
I think that's my thing. I hate it when shirts get like that.
Yeah.
Like, I have 10 shirts. I think I recently bumped up to 11. I can't remember the one I added to it. But the shirts that I consider retired, like, they got too old. Like, I have two D-Generation X shirts that are the original, the actual DX logo. One is actually from the original run. I have a Hulkamania shirt that I don't wear anymore. Unforgiven 2008 event shirt. That one I said I'm only wear for a year, and then after a year I'm gonna just not wear it anymore. I think there's just a handful of other shirts in there that I consider quote retired. Because I hate it when they get like that.
Yeah, I understand that. But let's get back to WIR. I mean, not WIR.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think I left off where, you know, I just didn't contribute because I didn't really want to blend in. And then don't get me wrong, I like the fact that Dan always says, you know, we always leave a light on for you. You know, you don't have to put in the most perfect call. But personally, I feel like I have to put in the most perfect call, which is why I started you know, the Miss International Award, if you remember that.
Of course I remember that because Mia Yim won one.
Oh man, that's right. I did give her one. I started that because I felt like nobody was talking about women's wrestling and nobody was giving it any props. So I was like, hey, you know what? I'm gonna do Miss International here. I'm gonna give a woman her prop. I'm gonna give some of these ladies their props. And then that kind of faded. And as you know, female wrestling started going down, I kind of started doing that less and less. But I might actually bring it back this year. That might be one of the five calls I do this year.
You definitely need to do them because I'm curious to who would wind up on that, and especially if you throw in some independent names. Because I know she did for me.
Yeah, because she...
Which is crazy because now she's in TNA.
Yeah, that's true. She is in TNA. At the time, she was... actually, you want to know how I came upon that? What I did was I started researching all the best independent females. Matter of fact, Saraya Knight was up on... was almost came close to second up. Almost came close. But I felt that Holly Rockamore, who's the runner-up, had a fucking great look to her. And she was like this... And she could really, really wrestle in a ring, but I felt I didn't find enough of her... I couldn't find enough of her where she's cutting a promo, you know? So that's why she was runner-up. Mia Yim won because, like I said, I thought she was really cute, you know? I like it, you know? I like the way she looked. I thought she was a really great worker in the ring. And I thought the only thing that separated her from Holly Rockamore is that she had... Her mic skills wasn't the best, but at least I could find her cutting a promo.
And I even think since then she's gotten way better. And she has a hardcore dedication to the business.
Yeah, I see that she does. Like, I just think that, you know, she should... If she would have came to TNA in 2011, I think she would have been way... I think she would have blown Gail Kim out of the water when it comes to her in-ring ability.
They actually almost had a match in 2011.
Why was that not a thing?
It was going to be at AIW, and it was going to be her versus... Well, it's going to be those two against each other. But the problem was they didn't like... They, as in TNA, didn't want her to lose, Gail to lose.
What is... Why? I don't get that. And
some companies are crazy like that.
Like, and that's another thing. And, man, speaking on 2011, TNA, that's a company I actually thought was second to none as far as competition to WWE goes, but they just royally keep screwing themselves.
I've always said with them, they're five steps forward. No. One step forward, five steps forward.
I don't... And it's just... My thing is, like, I think somebody... again, this is something somebody else said, and that I'm paraphrasing here. They have Austin Aries, Samoa Joe, Bobby Roode, whenever he decides to debut. They had James Storm, and they had... I think it was one more I forget, it was one more person that they had. I can't remember. All of these guys were TNA talent. They were the top of the TNA. They were all champions at one time. Now they're all in NXT and they're bigger than ever, which only says more to me is like, okay, it's not the talent in TNA. It's TNA itself. Like, and I hate to say this, I really do, but Dixie Carter needs to sell TNA.
Yeah, we've gotten down to, like, she's the only thing that hasn't changed, and they haven't changed. So it's like, yeah, this is the last straw.
To me, she wants to be Vince McMahon, but she doesn't have the experience, and she doesn't have the... She doesn't have enough of the falling on your face, but knowing how to get back up. Kind of gumption that McMahon has, she doesn't have it. I'm sorry, she just does not have what it takes to run a wrestling company. And that's not saying, and that's not saying a female can't run a wrestling company. Like, I think if fucking Stephanie McMahon goes, breaks off from WWE and buys TNA, I think she could run it perfectly. I think she can run it better than, I think she can run a wrestling company by herself. I think she can run it. I think she run TNA without without no WWE help, because she had, because why, she's a McMahon. She knows what to do. She has that mind frame. But Dixie Carter is not that person. And we've given her how many years now?
I lost count. Seems forever.
She's had so many, and she just had so many. This is the woman who has so many second chances after so many second chances. It's boiled down to, it's you. It's not talent. The talent is fine. It's you can blame the writers. You can blame Vince Russo. And hell, I'm not even blaming Vince Russo at this point, because it seems to me like at this point he was trying to just throw anything against the wall just to get eyeballs, just to get ratings up.
You can blame Russo. You can blame Hogan. You can blame Bischoff. But a lot of things. I mean, granted, I would say a lot of things have changed. But the one thing is, lately it's a mixed bag of nuts right now. There's things that I really like, and there's things that I don't like.
The things that I like right now currently about TNA is they have somewhat of an upside. I love the fact that they took EC3 and they fucking made EC3 the man. And I don't think that was TNA. I think that was EC3, if you ask me.
Oh, that's Michael Hunter all day.
That was EC3 all day. It seemed like he walked up to Dixie and told her, this is what we're doing. This is how I'm going to do it. If you say anything, if you object to anything that I'm doing that I think is right, I'm walking out the door. At that,
I think, I think they handed him that character. I did hear a report, but he took his personality and breathed the life into it. I don't know if it would have worked with anybody else.
And credit to him, because on WWE you can tell he was kind of stifled a little bit. But right now, as we speak, we can tell that he's the heart and soul of TNA right now. And I'm glad that they gave him the title and they let him run with it as long as he did with it.
I love that aspect of TNA right now. It seems like they're signing a lot of really good talent and using them, such as Trevor Lee, Pepper Parks, even though they haven't put him on. Well, they haven't put him on TV as far as I've seen. I'm about a week behind. I believe about a week behind. And that's the other thing. They've done some name changes. Cherry Bomb and Allison Kay, who are the two people that are with Maria.
You know what? And that's another thing, too. I'm glad they signed Mike Bennett. I always thought Mike Bennett.
Oh, yeah, I love
I always thought right Mike now. Bennett was – he was too WWE for Ring of Honor. Like, he was too much – like, kind of like how – Kind of like how Nakamura is way too flashy for New Japan. To me, Mike Bennett was way too flashy for Ring of Honor, and he needed to be somewhere that was on a bigger scale. Now, I'm not really feeling the whole Miracle gimmick a little bit, but I'm pretty sure it's one of those things that if he takes back, he tweaks it up a little bit, you know, puts a new fresh coat of paint on it, he's good to go.
I think they're making him the new EC3, and that's what I really enjoy.
Yeah, but we don't.
Not like they're replacing him, but they're kind of doing like, okay, they're giving him a taste of his own medicine, and now they're in so many words, they're putting EC3 up against EC3.
Like kind of a heel version of EC3, even though I really don't see EC3 as a face in this. I kind of see him as like the. Like I can't see EC3 as a face, like a do-gooder, because he just came off as that cocky, brash dude who just got over with the crowd.
But they're still making him a face because he has remorse for his actions, like everything he did with Spud prior and all that kind of stuff. Now, which is great, because actually I feel like all his everything he did before, all the people he wronged, is now turned on him. And they managed to make him the good guy.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed the Matt Hardy storyline up until they took that freaking Willow turn recently. But
that's
like I had no problem with Hardy as champion.
Me neither. I didn't have a problem with. I didn't see Hardy. Hardy as champion. That's fine. He's a nice transitional champion. But you know, to me, and here's another thing that makes me mad about TNA. A lot of the indie guys that sign over to WWE. Your Nakamura's, your trying to think who else. What's another indie guy that moved, that went over to NXT? TMDK. That's a shout out to Kata right there. Yeah, Gargano. All of those guys, TNA should have went after super hard. UHA Nations, TNA should have went after them super hard, but did not.
I mentioned in a call years ago, I think on my 1 year anniversary call, I basically did this pitch saying that Gargano needs to go to TNA. And then I did another call. I picked three names out and said, these three names need to be picked up by TNA. Need to be a part of Gut Check when that was a thing. And they had to be people that, like, they won Gut Check and then they immediately were going to be used on TV. Those three names were Davey Richards, UHA Nation, and Matt Cross.
Wow. Only one of those names actually made the TNA.
But if you look at it since then, Davey Richards, obviously, TNA. UHA Nation, WWE as Apollo Crews, and Matt Cross is Son of Havoc in Lucha Underground.
I think him as Son of Havoc is actually pretty cool. That's a nice little character he can tour with in case, you know, when Lucha Underground is over.
Well, he can tour with that, and he can just tour as Matt Cross, because there's a lot of history behind that name. He was on XPW back in the day, and not XPW, Wrestling Society X. No, he was an X. I think he was an XPW. Yeah, he was the last XPW tag team. He was tag team champion with Josh Prohibition. He was in Wrestling Society X. He was in, like, all these different things. And he was also in Tough Enough.
See, you know what we're doing here? We are talking about things. We are not talking about Monday Night Raw. We are actually talking about other aspects of wrestling.
Well, yeah, going back to the week in review thing, I mean, that's always the thing that bugged me, but I always felt like there's certain people that are content with that. And if that's what they want to do, like, the Chief is one of the best examples I've always used.
I love Chief. I love you, Chief. You're my homeboy. You're my ace.
But the thing that I've always said about him is, like, I learned this when I hosted. He comes in with his call and he says, you know, this is my report for the week. This witty comment, this question, that's it. And sometimes he doesn't even throw the question in. It's just like, this is what I think. And you might not get all his jokes or all his witty comments, but, like, he's content with that. Or the fact that
he's a Mets fan, but...
I mean, we've choked with so many things about him, or at least I have. Like, his love for baseball, his love for the Mets, his love for some of the anime that I know he loves. Do you remember the weird sketch thing he did with Fuzzball?
No, actually, I don't. I have to go back and listen to that.
If I were to pick a year, I want to say it was the end of 2012. Wow. I think. And, like, he did, like, because that was the thing. He would come up with these multi-part calls that he was telling a story over a couple months, which was smart. And he had this little, like, background story behind it. And I know the end, like, I always tease him about Fuzzball, and it has some sort of anime connection to it. I don't know. But a guy like the Chief, I mean, he's very content with that kind of stuff, and I'm not knocking it.
It's not a knock you podcast.
You have regulars like that, which is fine, which I've never been like that too, but there's also times when it's like Dolph Ziggler wins the money, not only wins the Money in the Bank, but catches in successfully. Yeah, my call is going to be about Dolph Ziggler and how happy I am. And I know other people was going to be like that too, but I was like, that week, I don't care.
I mean, when it comes to stuff like that, yeah, I mean, if that's something that you do because you're happy that Dolph Ziggler won the Money in the Bank, yeah, if you've been riding with Dolph Ziggler the whole time and you've been seeing this growth and you've been seeing, you know, him put his finally reach the top of the mountain or a step before the top of the mountain, man, call in about that. That's your boy. You've been riding with it. That's why I don't mind your Dolph Ziggler. That's why I never mind any of Dolph Ziggler calls, because this is your boy. You've been riding with him for this long. You better be happy that he won.
I mean, I get but that also. But I know I always definitely try to find different ways to stick out. There's always ways. And I do wish people would learn that too, but at the same time, then who's going to talk about those things that happened this week? And I always went back to when we had the Impact players. I always felt like the Impact players should have been the name for the Week in Review, and the Week in Review should have been the name for the Impact players. Because really, really on that show, we reviewed the week.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. But I feel like, you know what, on the weekend review, I mean, on the Impact Players, I felt like there were, you talked about different things. There were more, you covered more topics because not everybody called in to the Impact Players. Not everybody wanted to talk about something they already heard about on the weekend review. An Impact Player is like, oh man, I already talked about, you know, Raw. Well, fuck it, let me talk about TNA on the Impact Players. So I kind of felt like it was nice to have that little second show. But, you know, time constraints and, you know, being married now and, you know, having all these having, you know, a work life, a more steady work life than I used to have, you really can't do a second show like that. So I kind of understand why Dan kind of retired it.
Well, also the evolution of the shows in general of not only the weekend review, but how we would do things for the Impact Players. It's just like, there's no use for the Impact Players and there's no time actually either. If anybody wanted to step in, there's other shows. I mean, that's one of the things that always sucked is to getting other people to listen to the other shows. And I hate saying the other shows, but it's just ones that weren't those two, ones that weren't by Dan. Like, let's listen to the WrestleCast. Let's listen to the European Uppercut. Let's listen to the Spanish Announce Table. And everybody always has their reasons. And I've heard they varied. I've heard people, I'll throw his name out just because fuck him, is Shane. He says he won't listen to WrestleCast because we're too soundbite heavy. And that's basically because we have Mounty on and he likes to play soundbites. And I mean, I've heard people, they don't want to listen to Spanish Announce Table, which I was one of them for a while. Just I didn't like T-Max negativity, but he's changed all that. And there's other reasons why people won't listen to shows.
I like T-Max negativity a little bit. Because in a little bit, like in small doses, like I can understand how it can get a little annoying. But hey, what's up, T-Mac? I kind of like it because
T-Mac's not listening.
He better listen. I will tag him on Facebook and tell him he better listen. But no, but I kind of like the negativity a little bit because he offered that realism to it. He was like, no, that shit sucked. I watched the same show and that sucked. Especially if it was something that everybody kind of praised a little bit. Like with his whole thing about, with, you know, wrestling not being real. Like, I mean, wrestling not being a sport.
It's a sport.
This is the fun argument we get into. And this is something you can, and it's always something you can kind of jab at him a little bit with, and he kind of takes it in stride. It's like, it's not a sport. And I'll give you reasons why it's not a sport. It's a sport. And it just, I don't know. Maybe because I like frustrated T-Mac on the show.
I mean, I think the whole thing was at one point it was too much. He's toned it down. And it's, I mean, because I think, too, a lot of us really love wrestling. And I've been one of the main ones that I hate the IWC mentality. Yeah. And I do whatever I can to go against that. And I think a lot of the stuff that he was saying through those times was just kind of reflected IWC. Now, granted, he wasn't being the same thing, but it's just like that negativity is, I don't like that. I love wrestling. And I'm always going to find something positive. And I've heard people say like things like, oh, you're this and you're that because of, you know, you're positive, you're a fanboy. I'm like, no, it's, I love wrestling, period. I've gotten to the point now, there's not a wrestler that I hate. I don't just say I hate this guy. I'm like, yeah, I mean, I don't care for him. Whatever.
You know what? I'm kind of the same way too. Like, if you ask me to find a wrestler that I hate, I'm going to be like, I don't really hate them. I think they're boring, like Randy Orton. I find Randy Orton to be boring as hell. Like, I don't hate the guy. Like, I don't know you. My favorite phrase is, I don't know you enough to hate you.
I think I did used to really not like Randy Orton. And then sometime after Punk left, he became really entertaining. And I don't know if that's connected or not.
I'll give you another wrestler who I didn't hate, but I just found to be Gail Kim. I didn't hate Gail Kim. I just found her to be really boring. You know, boring to the point where if I see them come on the show, I'm not going to change the channel. I'm just going to go up and do something. I'm just going to go take out the trash or something. And go outside and contemplate life for a minute and be like, oh, that match is over. Cool. I'm going to go back in and watch the rest of the show. But, you know, I think a lot of times I think when it comes to like you said, people with that IWC mentality, like you said, like we mentioned before, it's all people trying to qualify their likes against other people. And I feel that we just don't. And I feel like as individual wrestling fans, we don't need to do that.
I think another aspect of it is fantasy booking. And if something doesn't go your fantasy booking way, it sucks. I'm like, does it really? And like when people bitch about Vince, and I'm like, this is Vince's show. You don't email into a writers of a show and say, hey, I don't like that.
You cast the wrong actor for Doctor Who, and I think it should have been this guy. He was better. He's a great. He would have made a great Doctor Who. As a world. What if? Huh? He would have made a great Doctor. And blah blah blah. Now if somebody was to say that, and if somebody was to have a podcast with that, you'd probably look at him. You'd probably look at him like you stupid. They probably asked that person, and they said no.
Well, actually, that mentality does kind of go in Doctor Who, because. Well, but there's a weird cycle about it. It's just going off the top of my head. It's like they'll announce like, all right, this is going to be the new Doctor. And people just automatically, they hate change. Okay, this is stupid. It's going to be dumb. I don't know, blah, blah, blah. How's it going to work? And they'll have a bunch of questions, you know, they're too old, they're too young, they're this, they're that. It's not going to work. And then they have the regeneration episode. And people are still kind of, well, yeah, I just don't like. And then they actually let the series that they're in a couple seasons, however they play out. And then they fall in love with them. They start really liking them. And then they're like, all right, this actor's leaving. It's going to be recast. This is going to be the new Doctor. Oh, man, I hate this new Doctor. Oh, it's not going to work. And yeah, it just starts all over again. Luckily, I mean, I experienced it a little bit while Power watching through the show, but it wasn't like, okay, this is gonna suck. It was just more or less, I started with the first guy, he was only on a season, or the first guy of the revival of it, and I was like, all right, I liked him, he was cool, but I don't know how I'm gonna do this next guy. Start getting into him, start liking him, like, I don't know how, I think that next guy, I'm not gonna like him, he has a weird chin, everything, I'm not gonna like him. He became my favorite.
I'm starting to really, really like George R. R. Martin's ability to kill off your favorite character before you get attached to him. Like, if you ever watched like Game of Thrones, that's like one thing Martin is known for, just murking your favorite character. Oh, you like the Mountain? Oh, you think the Mountain is cool? He dead. Oh, you like Ned? you like Ned Stark? He dead too.
Did you like the epic rap battles?
No, actually, I have not watched that one yet.
Oh my god, that one is so good, because he mentions that. Where he talks about, like, he kills the favorite actor, kills the favorite characters, and everybody's like, no, he didn't.
And you know what? And more and more, as I'm starting to hear about, like, these fandoms, I'm starting to be like, yeah, Martin had a great idea. Let's start doing that. Let's start a TV show where people start getting attached, people start liking the character, and then before the next season, that guy's dead.
I think it's very similar what they do in Doctor Who, but it's because the show has this long lasting culture behind it, and the Doctors, they interchange, and the Companions interchange, and people become attached to those characters, and we've seen many of them, like, die or whatever. I mean, there's been, like, my favorite Companion, played by actress Karen Gillan, like, when they didn't necessarily kill off her character. But whenever, like, she goes away, like, I kind of cried. And it wasn't like she just walked away. It was, like, a very emotional scene.
Again, kind of like characters in Game. Notice how we can juxtapose Doctor Who in Game of Thrones. It's amazing. It's kind of like that with Game of Thrones, too. It's like you get into, like, this character and you're like, oh, man, this guy is a badass. Oh, I can't wait to see what he does next. And then he dies. That's like that with the Hound. Like, I think the Hound was around for like a good 2-3 seasons before he got killed off. Aubrey Martell was around one season, and then the Mountain kills him. Ned Stark was dead in the first season, and that's really pretty much about and that's pretty much how your favorite character gets killed off. And I kind of like that.
How do we get on this
weird thing? Because we're talking about people, because I think it started with us talking about how people complain about Vince and the direction he takes the story.
That's true.
I enjoy.
It's negative T-Mac.
And negative T-Mac. But you know what? I don't trip on where a story goes in wrestling. I care about how entertaining the story is. Because
I was gonna say, I think one thing that I tried to tell T-Mac, and he hated this, where I think it's hard to judge a storyline until about six months later. And he tried to just shoot it down, like, I'm not going to wait. I'm going to make my judgment now. But no, it's because everything in storylines are just, they're week by week. And it's not necessarily a slow build, but the week by week stuff, I mean, it eats at you. It's kind of like the 24-hour news cycle stuff. That's what we want from wrestling, but we can't have that. So it's a week by week installment. And you have to go back and look 6 months after, or even up to a year, and then like really look at where they went with that storyline. Really look to see like all the different turns and what happened next, and maybe this was the reason why they couldn't do that.
I think you have to. I personally judge storylines pay-per-view by pay-per-view. Like how like is because at any on any to me on any pay-per-view the story could end. The story could culminate and. And to me, I judge it on how entertaining that storyline was.
I get that part of it, but it's just to really look like, because you have to wait till that storyline ends, because I've often said that, you know, wrestling is a never-ending story. And you really have to step back and look at how that whole thing played out and where everybody went afterwards. I mean, it's going to take a couple events, and you're going to get this kind of stuff. And you need, sometimes, especially at the end of the year, they're trying to line things up for Royal Rumble and WrestleMania. And sometimes you have to do some of those things. So it's kind of like, they're like, this doesn't make sense. It's like, yeah, because they're trying to line things up to what will make sense.
Again, you can't, I'm like, you can't really judge some storylines week to week though. Like you said, you kind of have to wait that 6 months and then look back on it and go, okay, that made sense. I see where they were going with that. Which, again, I think people need to stop, you know, trying to I think people need to stop fantasy booking altogether, personally. Like, we don't fantasy book fucking... No one fantasy books Game of Thrones or Doctor Who, so why are we doing it with wrestling?
I think, actually, people do it for some TV show. It's called fan fiction. And that's what I think I've often referred to. That's what it is it's wrestling's version of fan fiction. And some people think they're predicting the future, but when it doesn't go right, they're wrong. But when you get it right, it's predictable.
And then you don't like, and then some people don't like it. That's another thing too. And that's the thing that always makes me kind of go, what? When they get something right, they're like, see, I told you it was predictable. Like, then why'd you watch? To me, like, then why'd you complain about it in the first place? That's another thing that always irks me too. Like another thing that irks me about the IWC is this hate for Roman Reigns. Oh my.
Oh yeah. It's so stupid.
To me, it's stupid in the sense that here go a guy who is trying his damnedest to get over with the crowd, being the champion and getting cheers, who now has to resort to this tweener kind of thing because people are going to chant, you still suck, you still suck. And I'm like, well, fuck. I'm like, well, fuck. What do you want him to do? I don't know what's left for this guy to do.
I think they want him to turn heel. I think that's the big thing.
We already have a lot of heels. We already have a lot of heels. We have AJ. We have Kevin Owens. Those guys are already heels. There's too many heels. Stop with this whole everybody needs to be heel thing.
I mean, I agree that he does need to be heel, but it doesn't need to be now either. You can flip some other people. There's a lot of other things that happen. I still think this is going to be the year of Dean Ambrose, and I think this is going to be a huge
year. Here's the thing I have. You're going to disagree with me, and I know many people who listen to this are going to disagree with me, but I don't think I think they still need to hold off on giving Dean Ambrose the title because.
Well, they can do that with Money in the Bank.
That is true.
Cash him in immediately.
The reason why I say they need to hold off on it is because I don't want the title to define Dean. I want the title to complement Dean.
I think they can do that in the Money in the Bank chase, and they can create a huge story around it. There's a lot of people that think he's that level. Look at when he thought he beat Seth Rollins, and the big thing that where he grabbed the belt and ran up into the crowd, how crazy people went. Look at how everybody was before WrestleMania when he had his match against Triple H. And the thing that I'll always point out is they have kept Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose separate.
Yeah, but I think when he thought he won the title from Seth, I think that was just natural that people were like, oh my God, Seth lost. Fuck you, Seth. This guy's the champion. So I think that was kind of a natural thing. I think that would have faded if they had stuck with that. that would have faded after a while. But to me, when you give somebody like Dean, who you don't want the belt making him. You want him to be like, oh man, he looks good with the title. That guy right there, he deserved it. If you just thrust the title on him, it's kind of like with Jack Swagger. Who all remember? If you can remember Jack Swagger's world title run.
I think that Ambrose does deserve it.
I do too, but there has to be Money in the Bank is the perfect time to give it to him. I think if he wins the Money in the Bank and then he holds off a little bit, I think that is perfect right there.
I also think they can tease a lot with the Shield.
You can tease a lot with the Shield. And I think another perfect thing another reason why people need to stop booing Roman Reigns is that look at the person he just qualified in the main event picture, AJ Styles.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, no one can disagree that. I don't think anybody can disagree that Roman Reigns just qualified AJ as being in the main event picture. It's not strange to see him there. It's not, you know, like, where the heck he come from and how did he get here? It's like, okay, he's right where he needs to be. And to me, I think it's the same thing with Kevin Owens.
You don't want him to see his Money in the Bank?
I think he needs that person to qualify him to be in the main event. Not winning a title or anything. I mean, just surrounding the main event, in the main event picture.
I think they're building him up to that point. I think he has another year before he could possibly win Money in the Bank. Another thing I'm going with is we haven't had a face Money in the Bank holder in what seems like forever.
I'm trying to think.
If you want, the last one that's technical is Orton, because he was a face when he won, but I think I kind of class him more tweener because he was showing a little bit more heel tendencies. And no one was shocked when he did the cash in. It wasn't like the CM Punk one against Hardy. So I kind of count Cena as the last one.
I kind of want to say Daniel Bryan.
Daniel Bryan was after.
I got you.
I mean, not after, before, I should say. CM Punk was after. Not CM Punk. Cena was after because he cashed in on CM Punk in summer of 2012.
Oh, yeah, you're correct. You are correct. I got to look that one up. I looked that up. I'm glad I got the network. You know what I'm happy about? I'm glad I got the network. I'm glad I stuck with the network after a while. And I'll tell you why. Because I'm sitting around and if I'm heading off to work, right? And I'll have this, like recently I watched a match between Goldberg versus Scott Hall for the number one contendership. And then Goldberg versus Hogan later that night. For some reason, I wanted to watch that match and I brought it up on the damn network. I don't know why I wanted to watch that match. I just thought, you know, fuck it, I'm just going to watch this match. And it's something stuck out to me. Goldberg naturally got over with the crowd. Like, for some reason, this man, I'm looking, I'm like, nobody did Goldberg any favors, like any weird way out there favors. Like, he naturally got over.
I think it was the streak. Everybody loved seeing the badass, and they kept wanting to see the streak go.
The streak totally did help him out. But then, he actually fought some really weird people for the streak. Like, he had a match with Ming. There was a match with Mortis. I think he beat Mortis in like a minute. And then there was But I think the best match he had during the streak was with him and DDP. Halloween Havoc.
I don't remember that one.
I think it was Halloween Havoc 1998. Him versus.
I think it's the one thing about WCW. A lot of WCW is just kind of a blur to me.
I'll tell you how special this was. Big. This match did not show on the pay-per-view. They played it in full on Nitro. Like, for some, like, the story behind it is like, I guess WCW ran over time and the pay-per-view cut out just before the main event. And as an apology, they played the rest of the match on Nitro as the main event.
Okay, I remember that whole incident. I just couldn't remember the match. I just remember
that one. I think that was the best match he had so far. Because then he had a match for the U.S. title with Raven, and that one was just... You kind of knew he was going to go over, even with all Raven and the Flock interfering in that match.
That's when he won the U.S. title.
Yeah, that's when he won the U.S. title.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Because he beat Hogan for the world title.
And I actually remember watching that match, too. I was at a buddy's house and watching that one. Yes.
And if I'm correct, that was on Nitro, which was weird. I think
Was it what?
Was it in Atlanta, too?
Yeah,
so it was in Atlanta.
Thunder, it was at the... I was about to say the Thunder. It was at the Atlanta Dome. I was about to say the Thunder Dome, but that was not it. almost pulled a Hogan there. Pontiac Silver. We're at the Silver Dome. No, wait. What did he call it instead of the Silver Dome?
Silver Dome. He called the Super Dome the Silver Dome.
Because he had botched. Yeah, I remember him botching the name on that WrestleMania.
Yeah. And then anytime I've ever talked about the Superdome, I have to like check myself, like, what is that the right one? And I've even been to the arena, not inside, but I had a load that I had to pick up literally like right next to the arena. I took a big picture, really good picture of it.
Wait, didn't they tear that one down, or that was another dome they tore down?
That's the Silver Dome. Silver Dome's gone.
What'd they put in this place?
Because Silver Dome?
Yeah, because I remember them tearing that one down.
Because that used to be the home of the Pistons, I thought.
I think that's the home
of the Red Wings. One of the two.
I believe I was home of the Red Wings.
Okay. And they moved somewhere else. Because actually, no. Where's the Pistons
They from? Play in... Oh, I'm sorry. They play in Auburn Hills. Yeah.
Auburn Hills. Okay. As soon as like I knew you were going to say it, I was going to be like, okay, that's it. Because the Palace of Auburn Hills.
Where Ron Artest lost his mind and fought and tried to fight the entire arena. I remember that. I remember legitimately being scared of Ron Artest. When he finally got traded, I was like, people was like, well, where's Ron Artest going? He better not come to the Warriors. Fuck that shit.
No.
The Warriors don't play there yet. I know where you're talking about, but they don't play there yet. That place is being built right now. Where he would have ended up at, like, over the next train tracks is nothing but the hood. I am not kidding you. And an older buddy of mine talked about this too. He says a lot of the old arenas where they're at, if you go five blocks in the wrong direction, you'll end up in the hood. I know that's the hood because I live there.
Well, with the Cavs, wow, it's really? Downtown. And we, Cleveland, that's right next to the Progressive Field for the Indians. And then not that far away down the road is Cleveland Brown Stadium. The Cavs used to play in Richfield Coliseum, which is not the hood. It's kind of like I can't say a nicer area, but it's...
You're not likely to get robbed down there.
It is almost... I don't want to say the middle of nowhere either, because it's right off I-80. But like that, I've been there a handful of times. Actually, my first wrestling event was there. But they ended up closing that thing down in like 95, 96. I think they built the Q or the Garden Arena at the time, I think around 95.
Well, where the Warriors are moving from is the Oracle. I remember, in the same area, that's where the A's and the Raiders play. They play in the Coliseum next to it. But I will say, and from there, it's like a BART train. And then, like I said, cross the BART train, and you got a really rough area over there.
I want the Raiders to move just so they don't have to share the same venue.
I don't care with the A's. You know what? I've never cared about that. Like, okay, you two are not playing at the same time. You probably, I highly doubt that the Raiders, anybody's going to play at the Raiders. The Raiders are going to go anywhere playoff wise. So let's not worry about that. But I think those teams could share a field. I mean, shit, the Giants and the Jets share a field.
But they're the same sport. That's my thing. Like seeing like the baseball diamond during a Raiders game looks so weird.
I don't know, maybe because I'm used to looking at it. Like you can always cover it up. I don't know why they don't cover it up.
I was used to it too, and then the Indians moved out. They were like, they're like, we're getting kind of our own stadium. I'm like, okay, bye.
I mean, I could see it. I could see it. But you know, the only reason cities they have to do that is because the city doesn't want to spend money building a football or a baseball stadium. Yeah,
that's true.
But yeah, man, any other questions you have for me?
No, because I was actually about to wrap this up unless there's anything that you want to get off here.
Yeah, it's not really much. You know, we talked about my consistent absence from the WIR. I think you pretty much got to know me. Pretty much you got to know me more than most people from that show has. I think with the exception of like T-Mac and Captain Awesome, I think you're like one of the only people I even talked to from that show, with the exception of T-Mac. Because T-Mac only contributed twice to the WIR?
He was supposed to do the once a year thing, but for some reason he didn't get in one at the end of the year. Because that was going to be his thing. Sending the last show of the year, sending a call, and then being like, I'll hear, like, I'll send in a call next. Oh, wait a minute. Damn, it's the last one of the year. You know, I'll try to send another call.
Wow, but that's funny. That's a little funny to me. But yeah, I think that's pretty much it. I think that's pretty much it.
Any final thoughts, last minute plugs, or anything like that where people can find you?
If you're not a complete dick, I'll accept you on Facebook and I will follow you on Twitter. Which side note, I always try to follow anybody who listens to WIR, and I really think they're cool. Oh, one more person I want to shout out. I want to shout out. Crap! Oh man, his name is slipping. I thought of him earlier because I thought he was. I thought he was a really good. The Goon. That's it. I think the Goon.
Okay, Goon's good.
Is okay. Out of all, I'm not picking favorites, but I am picking favorites. But the Goon is one of my favorite callers. I love all his calls because, again, it's one of those you're talking about an aspect of wrestling that I've never heard before. Of course, you're my favorite too, Heavy. Okay, but yeah, like I said, if you're not a complete dick, I will follow you on Twitter. If you're a listener to WIR or you're a listener to the Trinity Topics Network, and I might follow you on Facebook. But be prepared for Donald Trump hate. So if you like Donald Trump, I don't know what to tell you.
Well, you got to throw out like how people can find
that. Oh, I am at the ultimate one. That's the spelled with two E's. If you took an old English class, that's how you spell it.
And is your Facebook link there, or do you want to throw out your real name?
My real name is Marcel Robinson.
Pretty much, if you're friends with me or other members of the community, you couldn't find him just as easily, because he'll be a mutual friend.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, follow me. I follow back, and, you know, pretty much, I'm not on Twitter as much, because I try to get on Twitter during, like, you know, pay-per-views and try to vote in WIRX as much as possible. But, you know, if you're watching a pay-per-view, chances are I'm probably going to be on Twitter talking about the pay-per-view. I don't try to do it as much during the show because it's just so much. It's just a lot to do the show because I'm trying to watch the show and come up with a funny one-liner. You know, and I feel like I can't do that during Raw, but I can definitely do it during a pay-per-view. And as far as Facebook goes, I try to be funny on Facebook. Okay, I try. That's pretty much about it.
All right. Yeah, everybody probably knows my plugs. I don't need to throw those out. So I want to thank you for coming on, and hopefully your team loses in six. Or I'd love it if they lost in four. That'd be amazing.
They're gonna win in six. They're winning in seven. Seven.
Oh, you said six.
I know, I said six,
the other day.
I'm going to go seven. Bumped because it up. They took the way they played the Thunder. I think they could win in seven. It's going to be a good series, no matter what. I'm not betting on the Cavs losing in four. That's just no.
No, I even heard someone defending the Cavs when people say like, oh, the Warriors are going to win in five, and they're just like, really?
I'm a fan, but I'm not that much of a fan. Yeah. I'm not counting out a whole team in five.
Yeah. I think it's kind of like, well, look at last year. We won at least two. So, it's almost like, at least give us those two again. Don't just be like, all right, better team. All right, you suck still. One. You get one. I'm just hoping they're competitive.
I trust and believe it's going to be competitive. But, you know, Warriors in seven. All right, we'll
Cavs
see.
Cavs in seven. All right, that will do it for us right here on Hanging with Heavy. And we will catch you guys. What the hell I ever decided to do another episode? Got two people in mind. We'll see when I string those together.